50-50 football on a Thursday. Neil Atkinson, and in the studio with me, I've got Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room, Rob Gutman from the Anfield Wrap, and I've got Paul Dehaney from Existential Nightmares About League Titles and Tottenham Hotspur. At the moment, and that's sort of where we're going to start with this one this week. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Natasha Henry again about Arsenal. She talked them down massively last week since then. They've won two games, so she must be feeling all is right with the world. And also from Amber Nectar, the Hull fanzine, Les is going to join us to have a lovely chat about Hull and how he thinks they are going to stay up, as do I at this stage of proceedings. But more on all of that to come. It's about the league title, first and foremost. It's why we've got Paddy and Chelsea face Everton at Goodison Park. So Paul Dehaney wants to carry Paddy Boylan aloft in the early stages of this show. We'll start, though, with Spurs. It's hard to contextualise how big a win it was against Palace, given the defeat in the Cup semi-final. You get the impression wheels would have fallen off everywhere if that had just finished 0-0.
Definitely. I was worried in the first half because it did seem like, although the players were competing really well, stood up physically against a very strong Palace side, they were giving the ball away when they would, you know, normally just play an A to B ball. It was going bobbling away from defenders, you know, tackles were a bit late. We just looked a bit anxious and a little bit leggy in the first half, which really concerned me. But the good thing was, though, as well as Palace have been playing recently, they didn't really cause us much bother going the other way, which meant that we went in at 0-0. And so the second half, Palace literally parked the bus and just said, right, come and break us down, Spurs. And, you know, up to when Eriksen scored, I was wondering where this goal was going to come from. But, you know, Eriksen steps up. I think me and you, Neil, were talking about Eriksen, you know, around October time.
A few months back, saying he wasn't doing it.
He wasn't doing it. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like he listened to us and he's just been on fire. I think in the last 13 games, he's registered goals and assists, which is a phenomenal record. And he's become such an important player. And that goal was so, so important in the context of where we go from here, because the margins are so fine, as we know. And had we not scored that goal, I don't know what effect it would have had on us for the rest of the season.
Looked like a legendary goal in the club's history, that, didn't it? Just felt like it should be important. It shouldn't just get consigned to, yeah, you won 1-0 at Palace.
Yeah, but you know what? I think I've said this before. I'm not entirely comfortable with this league title chasing business. It's the second season running now, and I honestly felt...
We'll have.
I thought I was going to collapse last night watching that game. My heart was just beating out my chest. I just had that nauseous feeling. It was horrible to watch. And even after we scored the goal, the first thing you think is, right, now we've got to manage the game, we've got to keep a clean sheet, let's hope they don't score in the last minute, you know. But we really managed the game. You just killed the game after that completely, which I was really happy about. The clean sheet, I was happy about. 8 wins in a row, that's not happened in my lifetime. You know, that just goes to show the context we're working with here. For us to win the title, we're going to have to win another 5 games, which will make that 13 in a row. We haven't done that since we won the double, I don't think. You know, it's a tall order. It really is.
I feel Spurs have reached a point, whatever happens now, where you can look at it and go, this is 2 seasons worth of a really, really good set of runs of something approaching a challenge. And it has to be acknowledged that Pochettino's got Spurs on a trajectory now that isn't just going to tail off next season.
Well, you would hope to think not. I mean, I read a stat yesterday that we've accumulated the most points out of everybody in the last 2 seasons, which might not necessarily give us a title. But somebody was saying to me before, oh, you're going to blow it again like last season. I said, it's a different context, because last season we did have a chance and we blew it a couple of times to sort of catch up when we had games we should have won. Whereas this time we've actually come from nowhere. Nobody was giving Chelsea a title race. And now we've won 8 in a row. So if we weren't to win from here, then how is it a failure? Because effectively, we've put ourselves into a race that was a procession.
Welcome to Liverpool's world in 13-14, where we're laughed at because of Gerrard's slip. And we go, hang on, we were tipped to finish 5th or 6th, and we nearly won the bloody league. Yeah. You know, anyway, don't get me started.
The mentality of this is particularly interesting for me, because you yourself have mentioned there that last season, Spurs weren't maybe expected to do much. Eventually, then they were in a title race against somebody like Leicester, who were even more unfancied, and then they ended up fluffing the lines. This time, Chelsea were the clear front runners. But I just wonder, you mentioned there that you had an issue with the whole kind of managing the game, that kind of thing, and you were worried whether Spurs were going to do it. this may also be an issue for the players as well.
Definitely.
This is the second season they've been in a title race, but there are players in that Chelsea side who I think probably on current form are inferior to Spurs. Mm. Players in this Chelsea side that have got a bit more nous about them, and that's what ultimately gets sides over the line. Mm. And I wonder, Spurs need to either get over the line in an FA Cup or a league title race to take that next step and then ingrain it in their mentality. There's still a slight mentality issue for me.
Definitely, but I would counter that by saying, you know, he's 2 years into the job, and I don't think anybody, when he took over, would have thought we'd be where we are now. So we're almost like a victim of our own success, in the sense that people are saying, oh, you know, they need to win a trophy really to... You know, to emphasize, you know, the good play that what we've been doing. But I would always say, look at what we're competing against. You know, we're this is a strong league. This isn't a two team league. This goes seven deep. Do you know what I mean? In terms of teams that. Maybe six.
I would agree, by the way.
It's
six teams. We'll speak about it later. But there's six outstanding teams, and then there's one that's better than the rest.
Everton almost in a league of their own, if you like. So it's not easy to do, man. In any normal season, it wouldn't be easy to do. But the fact that, you know, last season we were told, oh, it's a transition season for everyone else, and they're all going to spend money, and Spurs aren't going to be nowhere in that top bracket again. Yet still we find ourselves competing again, and it irks me that people are labelling this kind of, oh, if they don't win it, it's going to be a failure. I don't believe that. Progression for me, third to second is progression. Fifth, the season before we finished third. Fifth, third, second.
And also a likely number of points. I mean, you're going to be talking about a side that's in this league this season's almost certainly going to break 80 points. I mean, I'm not going to go, it's two more wins out of the last five, breaks 80. Forget what Chelsea do for a second. You know, that's, if you, you know, any season, if you say, you know, would you take 80... 80 plus, 83 plus, then you'd always say yes, because that can always give you the chance of something, and certainly I would guarantee you top four, and that's where Spurs are at the minute. I think that's a, you know, and the goal difference as well, the goal difference is 47. It's a genuinely great goal difference that Spurs are currently kicking around with. Again, you break 50 with your goal difference, you're absolutely flying on that score. And, you know, I think that all of this sort of adds up to the fact that it's been a very, very good season. The problem is you're probably going to run into this Chelsea side that did do the 13 game run earlier in the campaign, and that's just going to be the difference, that their run's probably going to be 13 games. Yours is probably going to be 9 or 10.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and I've tried to condition my mind as to, we're going for second. Not in a... what's the word I'm saying?
Defeatist.
I'm not being a defeatist. I'm being a realist. And it's more to do with that fact of, we've won 8 in a row in the... What's the Premier League? Was it 14 in a row or 13
in a
row?
Chelsea's 30, I think, this season. Yeah.
So, you know...
I think the top flight is 14 only, maybe.
The fact that's only been done a few times shows how difficult that is. You know, you come up against bad refereeing decisions, a poor performance... You know, ascending off. You know, it's the law of averages is that run's gonna come to an end, and we're gonna drop a point or points somewhere along the line, and that's what I'm conditioning my mind to not build myself up for failure. You know,
we still have a lead, don't we, Bradley?
Yeah, well, it's definitely an upward trajectory, as you say. It's a young team, relatively young in comparison to Chelsea in particular. If they've accumulated the most points over the last 2 years, though, I think you can point to that and you can say there have been spells when they've been comfortably the best side in the league. And I look at the respective teams and you go through the spines, and I think there are more flaws in this Chelsea side currently than there are in the Spurs one, which brings me on to the semi-final over the weekend. And I looked at that game. I, again, thought Spurs were the better team on the day. But somehow Chelsea just had enough in those important moments. More control from Spurs, granted. But in those important moments, Chelsea were slightly more clinical and knew how to get over the line. And that's the distinguishing factor, because it may well be that the true fruits come in a year or two's time when this side matures. It's incredibly young. You look at the fullbacks, Walker and Rose, still loads of years left in them. Chelsea have got a few players, the likes of Terry Department and stuff. You wonder the kind of effect that's going to have on the dressing room and whether they're able to maintain the leadership element that he brings with them. Now Spurs are a better side, but don't fully know it. in the future they may well do. It just needs one defining moment.
I think it's also it's just also split seconds in games where there's you know it's that straightforward. And the semi-final is a great example of it. Like for instance, Matic isn't scoring that goal again anytime soon, and that's the goal which, for instance, just ends the game as a contest because Spurs know it'll be hard enough to get one. The idea of getting two makes it really, really difficult. And I think sometimes that just happens. And I always, you know, my thing on all, you know, a lot of the games I've seen this season, I think the most you can ask for against sides around you in the top six, wherever you are in that top six at the minute, and I think this, when we come on to talk about Everton, this will be a thing that we'll talk about, is that they're genuinely competitive. And that there's a and that's the beginning, middle, end of it. Because if you're coming up against elite footballers, well, elite footballers can just do something and take the game away from you. The best example is actually just Messi in the weekend just gone against Madrid, where he just does that and they've won the game. And Barcelona doesn't deserve to win the game, but they've got the best player in the world and he's done that. And that he's took the game. And even the one that he equalised, the equaliser he gets is just simply off the basis. The fact that, well, if you've got Messi and he's nowhere near as good as him, but if you've got Eden Hazard or if you've got Dele Alli, or if you've got, from a Liverpool point of view, Sadio Mane, or if you've got one of these players who can just simply dance around three and put it in the bottom corner, then you're just all, what are you all meant to do?
I'll be honest with you, I wasn't actually as deflated as I thought I would be. I think I'd have been more deflated if we went into the game, the League Cup final a couple of years ago when we played Chelsea and we just really were too young and inexperienced. We just didn't turn up. There was just too much know-how for us. Ironically, this time I thought that we everything apart from the goals they scored was fine. We thought we bossed the midfield. You know, Dembele and Dier and Wanyama kind of bossed it over Kante and Matic. I thought that we were comfortable in the game, but it was just those crucial moments. You know, a penalty, stupid free kick conceded by Alderweireld for the first goal. Although, you know, you're not expecting everyone to score from a direct free kick every time they take one. And then Hazard's, you know, opportunist moment, and then Matic's unbelievable strike. Five shots on target the whole game, four goals, you know. There's not much you can do about that. I came out of there feeling, you know, we gave a good account of ourselves, and that's all you can hope.
Looking into the weekend then, Paul, it's a hugely troubling fixture from an Arsenal point of view. I'm sure we're going to talk to Natasha Henry in a second, but for your side, quickly, you're expecting to play what's currently your strongest 11, no Rose, but I think everybody else is...
No, I think Dembele went off with a twisted ankle at half-time, so that could possibly be...
Could go either, but Wanyama's back now.
But you've got Wanyama and Dier back, so it's not as... If this was this time last season, we'd be all panicking now, but we've got plenty in the locker, I think.
And they might be missing Sanchez because he was hit in the face by a ball.
Yeah, I heard.
A round one.
Koscielny, I think Koscielny's struggling for them. You know, it's a derby match. Everyone will be up for it. Injuries don't really come into it too much. I think people just turn up. And it's a difficult one. I saw a really interesting documentary with Thierry Henry and Ledley King talking about derby matches. And they were saying how, you know, no matter where the team is in the table, it sort of becomes a leveler. As we all know, it's a cliche. But they were saying, I forgot the point I was going to make completely here, so I'll just style it out and say...
I hate you when that happens.
Yeah, don't you? But yeah, no, it was a great documentary, so if you can catch it, watch it. Yeah.
It's, Paddy, before we go over on the Arsenal point, bring Rob back in a second, it's a big test of character for both sides. I think Spurs, the test of character is they're better than Arsenal. Now they need to play a game of football where they demonstrate they're better than Arsenal. And that comes with its own issues and its own questions. And from the Arsenal side, they've just dug three good wins out, but without ever really playing well, without ever particularly looking fluent. So to dig another one out, because you think that's the only way in which they are going to win the game. If they go toe-to-toe, you'd think they'd get undone. They're going to have to find another rearguard offensive in order to pull something around.
Yeah, I actually thought they dug one out the other night against Palace. You look at that strike from Eriksen, and you need those players to make the difference in those moments. Again, we'll speak about Everton later. We don't have that kind of player. Spurs do. But it's about knowing that you're better than Arsenal. It's a mental thing. It's the whole... We are now the superior side in North London. We are going to show that. And they should do, because they're comfortably better than Arsenal. I think in the end, the fact that they've got a slightly more stable core, the likes of Vertonghen, Alderweireld, will make a difference, because with Koscielny not being fully fit, I think that's an area of the pitch where Kane will isolate them, right, and they'll probably get over the line.
I think it's an interesting one, because I think Spurs are... It can go either way for them. I think they're going to be in an emotionally charged state, aren't they? It's a fragile a fragile state of mind they'll be in. They could, if they find their rhythm early, they could apply the confidence they've gained from these 8 wins and from their season, and they could really give Arsenal a lesson. But then Arsenal, conversely, are the kind of back in a little Wenger-like zone. He's a specialist in these situations and these kind of in the fourth place run-ins. I mean, I can joke about it, but he is. Yeah. He's quietly got the 3 wins. He will feel he'll be able to keep Tottenham at bay and maybe nick it. And I think the longer the game goes on, I think it might worry Spurs. And I can't call this, to be honest.
Do you think that the game before preceding that is going to have an effect on, you know, if Everton beat Chelsea?
I think
there's almost no outcome where it doesn't exacerbate it, if you know what I mean. It shouldn't exacerbate it.
Well, I think there's too much riding on the singular game itself, the fact that it's the last ever, more than likely the last ever North London derby, the fact that Arsenal can stop
us...
At White Hart Lane, sorry. The Arsenal can stop us from winning the title. We can basically end their top 4 hopes. If we beat them, they cannot finish above us for the first time in 20 years, mathematically. You know, there's so much riding on it on both sides that, you know, the game takes care of itself, doesn't it?
I spoke to Natasha Henry earlier on about this from an Arsenal perspective. This is what she had to say. Very rarely get people on back-to-back, but the end of the season's insisting upon it to a certain extent. And what a difference a week makes for Natasha Henry. I wonder if it does make a difference. They just feel like 2 big scrapped out wins. They're not necessarily astonishing performances from Arsenal, but it looks like a side that's worked out, first, that it really wants to win and wants to win together, and secondly, how to do so. So it's been a big week for the Arsenal cause.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it's been a brilliant week, but I'm not dreading watching football or reading about it this week, to be honest. Last week, I was not very positive about Man City. And I think we all agree, both games against Leicester as well last night, very un-Arsenal-like. But that's something that I always quite enjoyed, because I always think no one expects us to win a battle. No one expects us to win a fight. So when we do, it's like the underdog kind of rising to the top. So I'm always going to be happy when we scrape. I don't care how we win, as long as we win.
Well, there's tons of togetherness, I think. That's the thing that sort of surprised me, is that you were talking as though there was no togetherness last week, or that there'd been a period of time where that had sort of begun to disappear. A lot of lads arguing with each other on the pitch. You do wonder whether or not, without it being reported, without us knowing about it, if there's been an exchange of views and there's been a bit of, right, well, we're in this together. We've got now until the end of the season. Then it becomes a different problem. It's someone else's job at the end of the season. But you do sort of wonder whether or not there's 11 players or 14 players or 17 players who've had a big chat together and gone, we're just not standing for this. Let's do our jobs.
I think it's weird, because at the start of the season, I kind of felt like there was a camaraderie that we hadn't often seen at Arsenal, you know, going back to Gallas days and things like that. So the kind of disjointedness of the team or the squad in general has been a shock to me. But I don't just think it's maybe that they're talking. I think playing people like Oxlade-Chamberlain, playing people like Holding, and even Ramsey to a certain extent, some guys that maybe haven't had the greatest of opportunities within the squad, but they give 100%. I'm not saying Ramsey's the greatest player on earth, but you can never say the boy doesn't try. And I think sometimes it's all well and good playing certain players, your Sanchez and stuff, but it was so good to see someone like Rob Holding get an opportunity at the weekend and show what he can do, because I'm a very big fan, and especially Oxlade-Chamberlain. There's all this talk of him leaving, and he's always struggling to get a run in the team, but he's been really good the past few weeks. And I think that brings a different dynamic, because it says to those who weren't pulling out the results, there are other people that are happy to do your job, you know, and it shows sometimes the fans that there are players there who are on their level, so to speak, in terms of the love and appreciation they have for the club.
I think that's a massive thing. I think it's something which, you know, it can be overstated at times, that there's certain players. I noticed that Ramsey's come out, for instance, and he's given an interview saying that he thinks the players have been letting Wenger down, and that sometimes dressing rooms just need certain personalities, and we don't get to see that as supporters. We don't get to see the impact that a certain type of personality, a certain mindset can have. And that's, you know, it's only 2 wins on the board, but you can now match it with the Middlesbrough one again, where you were saying, well, it was only Middlesbrough and they didn't play that well. But that's not 3 wins. And 3 wins is something you can really begin to hang your hat on as a football supporter. You can begin to think to yourself, well, these lads are going to pull it out in key moments. And the City games, you know, it's a great example in that Arsenal aren't there. You know, they're not the better side across the game. They probably, if you were to if you were to rate...
On paper, City have a far better team than we do.
Yeah, and they're not the better sides. There's all this sort of stuff, but they hang on in there, hang on in the game. The decisions are terrible across the board. I think both sides suffer from the bad decisions across the game, but it doesn't matter from an Arsenal point of view because they get the job done. And sometimes something changes somewhere in a club and we'll never even know. And you might even try to say it's tactical, but this doesn't look tactical to me. This just looks like loads of footballers rolling their sleeves up.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's very easy to forget, you know, with their six packs and their perfect hair and their great abs, you know, and their great calves, that they are human beings. And I don't think any of us can sit here and say that we've never had a bad day at work, because none of us are perfect. And I think it's what we find as fans and media is that we forget that sometimes. We expect them to go out there and perform every week because, you know, they earn loads of money. They only play three games a week. Why shouldn't they?
Yeah.
But they are human beings. And a lot of the time, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know what's going on in the dressing room. You know, someone could have fallen out because someone spilled ketchup on their white shirt. That's human nature, and they are colleagues. So I think it's very easy to say, oh, they're not doing their job properly, but we don't always know what's going on. And humans make mistakes, and, you know, we're not fallible or infallible. I'm not sure which word it is. But, you know, I'm glad to see that we've got three wins. It's a little concerning now because we're going to have to deal with the whole is Wenger staying until the FA Cup, I presume.
Yeah.
When he should have just announced it yesterday. Yesterday was the perfect day. But, yeah, I think three wins on the bounce and, you know, if we win our games in hand, we could effectively be back in third. So it's not really that bad a couple of weeks.
It's defined in the league sense. I think it's defined by the next four, of which three are away. We'll get on to the big one against Spurs in a minute. But, you know, you mentioned the games in hand. It's not straightforward. It's not just winning the games in hand. It's winning the games full stop at this stage where, you know, Spurs away is not great. Come on to that in a minute. But then there's a tough game against United coming up as well at home. And Southampton away is one of the games in hand, and that won't be straightforward. Southampton are tied on offside. And then Stoke away as well, which has always had a certain frish on for Arsenal, which is quite strange, though Stoke are very un-Stoke this season. But it's those four, this next four in the league, isn't it, which will define everything. Because for all the talk of games in hand, if Arsenal only take 6 points from them regardless, then it'll need, you know, two of Liverpool, City and United to have been pretty poor to still have a sniff. It's got to be, I mean, Arsenal have got to be looking at the very least at 4 points from the next two, if not just six.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I keep seeing a lot of people saying this is the most highly anticipated London derby in history. Well, no, it's not, because the most highly anticipated one was the one when we won the league at their ground. So let's get real about that, firstly. That's really annoying me.
Strong needle, yes, love it.
Pardon?
Strong needle, love it. Put a bit of stick in. I like it.
It's true. We could damage their chances, but they're not going to win the league if they beat us. So, you know, if we're talking about magnitude of game, winning at their house, that's a bigger game for me. And even if I was a Tottenham fan, I would probably think the same way. I don't know if it's the best time to play Tottenham. I don't think there's ever really a good time to play Tottenham. But in a way, I kind of like the fact we're underdogs. You know, I like the fact that everyone's expecting them to beat us. So we're in a win-win situation because no one expects us to win. So if we take anything from that game, we're the ones that actually come off better off because everyone's expecting them to get 3 points.
There's tons of pressure on Spurs at the weekend. We're speaking to a Spurs fan later on, but there is tons of pressure on Spurs at the weekend, I think. I think it throws open an interesting dynamic, I think, where, you know, how often Tottenham actually have been the overdogs, for want of a better phrase, in this fixture.
Yeah.
And the extent to which they are here, but also the extent to which the pressure is on them. Yes, the pressure is on Arsenal around top four, but the pressure is very much, you know, it's bang on Spurs with reference to something that's much bigger, much more significant. And that could lead to a difficult afternoon, certainly as they'll know by kickoff what's happened between Everton and Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, I think as well, it's actually better for us that we're not at home. There's so much drama going on at the Emirates, outside and inside. And it just seems a lot of friends that go more often than I do are telling me how toxic it feels at the moment. Since for the first time in 10 years, and that's not a good feeling. I think our away fans are always impeccable. You know, you can always hear our away fans, and yeah, Tottenham are going to be on our back, but we're not the ones under pressure. And hopefully, the fans can get behind the team and just sing the whole game. Just let them know you're there. Let the game pan out. Don't start booing after 10 minutes if someone misplaces, because that doesn't help anything. If we saw with Theo against Leicester, he's nervous because fans are getting on his back. He's not a 19-year-old. He's, what, 27 now? Played God knows how many games, and he's feeling that pressure, and it's knocking his confidence. We don't need to be knocking their confidence at White Hart Lane. That will give Tottenham the upper hand. It's important that we go there and support the team. If they're rubbish at the end of the game, I'm not a fan of booing, but if you want to boo, then I will kind of allow you that opportunity. But don't be doing it through the game, because it sends such a bad vibe to the players. And it does make it harder for them to do the things that they should be doing.
On the tactical points, it's noticeable to me he starts Sanchez up top against Leicester. He goes to Sanchez leading the line. And that's where at the start of the season, Sanchez was, you know, he was on fire. He's got the numbers that he's got this season. A lot of those goals have come when he's leading the line. Would you just go with that now till the end of the campaign? Almost just say, you know what, that seems to be where our best player wants to play, where our best player is at his most dangerous. Let's just commit to our best player and let him cut loose there and create a bit more space for Ozil in behind and let him go and play the football that he wants to play in that space.
No, because Spurs have two of the best central defenders in the league. You can't just leave Sanchez up there by himself.
So you'd want to see Giroud or someone next to him for the North London derby?
Yeah, I think you have to go two up top. You have to go all out attacking aggressive. Obviously, you don't want to be leaving yourself open and conceding goals. But Jan Vertonghen and Alderweireld, and I mean, look at the size of them for a start. They will have a field day if it's just Sanchez by himself, especially if they manage to halt that space between him and Ozil and whoever else is playing in midfield. I think we have to go out there and show them that we're coming here to win. We're coming to fight. We're not coming to allow you and give you the league. As much as none of us want Chelsea to win the league, we still don't want you to win it either. So if you're going to win it, we're going to make it a challenge for you and we're going to put up a fight.
Okay, give me a prediction.
2-1 Arsenal.
Love it. That's all you want. All you could ever ask for. Let's get back and see what everybody else thinks. Always great to speak to Natasha. And this one, I agree with Robin that it's too close to call. There's almost too much on it. I'll go to you first, actually, Paddy. It's a game where it's easy to think that Spurs should end up with having too much, but it wouldn't surprise you if Arsenal found a way. And I think what Rob said before is, I think, the core point. This is very much a game where Spurs need to score early. You think that the longer it goes without Spurs having a lead, and certainly if they can get a two-goal lead, you feel as though they'll romp home one way or another. But if they don't, if it's 0-0 on 60, if it's 0-0 on 65, that's where all your doubts begin to come to the fore, where people are looking to the bench, where all the reassurance that you've had is not quite there. If things aren't quite right, things aren't quite clicking, that's where it can go wrong.
But that's also where the result at Goodison Park comes into play as well, because I think if Spurs know they have to go and win to stay in the title race, you get to 65, 70 minutes and 0-0, and there's an element of doubt in your mind, and you know you have to push forward, you have to get that goal, and then maybe you open yourselves up to Arsenal striking on the counter-attack. So in that regard, it will be fascinating to see how the game at Goodison plays out and the effect that has on the North London derby. If Spurs score, I can see a heavy victory for Spurs. As we've said, they're a much better team, but it is about showing it. The early goal cements that in the minds of both the players and the fans.
Do you know what? I think sort of perversely, Spurs are under, this is perversely, they're under less pressure if Chelsea win at Goodison. Yeah. I think they're less stressed on 60, because I think they're going, you know what, if we nick it later on, we nick it. If we don't, at this stage, I don't think Spurs think they can win the league. Maybe you contradict me, Paul, but I don't think their heart of hearts, they think this is going to be the year they win the league. I know how we felt when we were chasing down United. This nearest analogy I can think of, in 2009, we never closed the gap to within more than four. And you celebrated like you could win the league every week when you got a win and you kept in it, but you didn't quite believe it in your heart of hearts. Different from 2014. But if Everton beat Chelsea and Spurs can go within a point of them, then all hell breaks loose. Yeah. Then Spurs are shitting it.
Yeah.
as a technical term.
Yes.
I agree 100%. I refuse to get that excited until it gets down to 1 point. That I could probably set myself up for a fall, but I just think psychologically, with our superior goal difference, it just means that Chelsea have to draw one of their last four games and we'd have to win our last four games. And it sounds like a tall order, but it makes it a little bit more likely than at the moment.
Actually, did Chelsea only have to draw at Everton to make that scenario come into...
Well, if they draw and we win, knocks it down to 2 points.
And that's when your goal difference comes into play, because you can win and they draw and you'd be level. But
yeah.
Yeah, so it's draw or defeat helps you.
Yeah, I mean...
That's the key. That's interesting.
It's not necessarily people saying, oh, Chelsea have to lose 2 games or whatever. No, they don't. They just need to draw
two games.
They don't even have to lose, but we'd have to win all ours.
All right, then. I'm going to take predictions. Paul last, Paddy first.
2-1 Spurs.
Rob?
1-1.
Natasha went for an Arsenal win. What are you doing?
Do I go with my heart or my head?
Go with whatever bit of you
like.
Or
your tempting fate prediction.
Coccyx.
The first thing that came into my head was 2-1, so...
2-1 Spurs?
Yeah, I'll stick to that.
2-1 Spurs. All right, then. Moving on towards... Everton versus Chelsea. And Paddy, you stated it there, it's quite an interesting thing that that players who can, as we're talking in general, you know, a player who can do something that takes a game away from somebody, something irresistible. And it strikes me that the interesting thing around Everton is they've got the leading scorer in the country on the one hand. They've also got, I think, one of the most attacking, most exciting young attacking midfielders in the country in Barkley. But neither of those players, for all the strengths that they've got across the board, are footballers who can, for instance, go around three and put it in the bottom corner and take a game away from you. They both threaten to do that every now and again, but neither's got the sort of pedigree of it where, if you look at, for instance, you know, Chelsea have got a couple of those lads who just do something out of nothing. Spurs have got 3 or 4 of them. Yep. Liverpool have got 2 or 3 of them. Manchester City have got 3 or 4 of them. United, even though they've been at times a little stodgy, they've got 2 or 3 of them as well. And Arsenal even have still got, for instance, Sanchez, who's capable of just simply of genuine magic. Whereas whilst Everton have been very good this season, you said before, you see it as 6 outstanding sides and then one who's better than the rest.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where they are. And it could simply be because they haven't got that player.
I think it is. And the result against West Ham cemented that fact for me, in my mind at least. It's one of those games where you don't play particularly well. And of course, that's going to happen over a 38-game season. But it's about getting through. And that's very much what Spurs did. The first thing, as soon as that shot went in from Eriksen, was thinking, who in that Everton side would do that? Ross Barkley has the potential to, but he's still not followed through on that promise, particularly away from home. And you look at the disparity in performances between the away games and the home games, and it's a completely different Everton that lines up. At home, they play with a more aggressive style, higher tempo. They feed off the fans, in effect. Away from home, not so much. And the performance against West Ham was so limp, it almost seemed like a pre-season friendly. It was that bad. It's not going to be the same. Thankfully for Spurs, it's not going to be the same against Chelsea at Goodison on Sunday, because as I mentioned, the home record is so impressive. They've only lost to Liverpool this season in the league, and you can expect a different Everton from the one that lined up against Spurs. It's just whether those players, Lukaku, Barkley, in their heads, they think they're top four players. Top four players make a difference in these games, and I don't think we've fully seen that yet from either of those two.
On that, just to come back to that, the big win that you've had this season against a side who you're within a decent points total of at the moment. And it is worth pointing out that as we, you know, at the time of we're talking about this, there's a 14-point gap between Everton and West Bromwich Albion, and that's borne out by events, if you know what I mean. Like, not least Everton battering West Brom earlier in the season. So there is that. What I'm sort of saying is the only one against, for instance, the sides who are above Everton where you've really seen that is the Man City home game. And that was as much a triumph of grinding them into the ground and just not giving them any space or time as it was the idea of sort of playing them off the park.
Yeah.
I think they've down tools on 65 there, City. Their heads have gone. They didn't want to know. It was a proper, they don't want to know now, boys, last 25 minutes. And that's one way to win a game. And it's, if anything, the best way to win a game is the idea that you break the opponent's spirit to such an extent. But it's not, as you say, it's not a taking a game away from them thing. It's not a suddenly we've got 3 or 4 players who are just playing simply too well for these to be able to live with, which is what the sides who are ahead are capable of having on the pitch at some point.
Yeah, and it was the sheer relentlessness of the Everton midfield, I think, in particular. You look at the lads that played for City on that day, and it was Yaya Toure and Pablo Zabaleta. We had Tom Davis, Morgan Schneidlin, Idrissa Gueye, and we swamped them in there, and it was that kind of performance. But the elements of control, that comes from somebody that gets on the ball and dictates play, a Mikel Arteta who we had in the past. And that's a really interesting point if you look at how Everton played under Roberto Martinez and what they're attempting to do now. And it remains to be seen whether Koeman can facilitate that kind of performance, because he may not be that type of manager. one of the best games I've ever seen Everton play was under Roberto Martinez. It was a 3-0 win at home to Arsenal. And I thought Everton out-footballed Arsenal on that day. We are yet to do that this season.
And is this going to come down to a question around personnel? Is it going to come down to a question around approach? Is it going to come down to a combination of the two, really? I think you're right to say that. I think there's Ronald Koeman's side will always battle. And I don't think that there's no getting away from that reality. But the idea of that next step up, is this only going to happen when he either has the players to do it, or do you think even then he's a manager who very much wants to, who's quite happy in a sense with a tight-ish game that we're going to find a way to pull away from?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I've not fully resolved that in my mind yet. I think we need to see what comes next in this Koeman project, because he came in last summer and there were some real flaws, some serious flaws and hangovers from the Roberto Martinez era. And he's more or less addressed all of them. If you look at the players he's brought in, Idrissa Gueye and Morgan Schneiderlin, central midfield, he's made Everton much more compact. What follows next is particularly interesting. Part of me wonders whether he's able to set up a side to dictate games in the way that we see from the likes of Arsene Wenger on occasion, even Jurgen Klopp. But there's also a question mark surrounding the midfield and the way that he goes with that as time progresses. Because at the moment, he favours Schneiderlin and Gueye just in front of the back four and Tom Davis slightly further up. Schneiderlin's great on the ball, but that midfield's more workmanlike than attempting to dominate in a ball possession kind of sense. If he's going to go down the route of wanting to take on the top six at their own game, he's going to need to go out and buy an Adrian Silva from Sporting in Portugal, somebody that's going to do that. So the transfer strategy is particularly important. The one name so far that's been mentioned is Gylfi Sigurdsson. He fits the other box. He meets another criteria for me, insofar as if we'd had him on the pitch against West Ham last weekend,
yeah,
that might have finished 1-0 to Everton with him scoring a free kick or a shot from range in much the same way Eriksen did against Palace. Koeman still has these issues to resolve in his own managerial style, and I don't think anybody would suggest that he's the complete manager at this point in time.
Yeah, it's a very interesting game. My hunch is that it's going to be a bit of a thriller, this. Chelsea are shipping goals. Really, they're in a pretty bad phase of conceding goals. And I think Everton are too strong at home and too fired up to just not being hugely competitive. I actually find it hard to imagine Chelsea winning this. I know that sounds a bit mad. I can see it being a 3-2. I'm going to call it, so I'm going to say Everton are going to win this, but it's going to be a mad game, and I think it's going to be about 3-2.
Before I go to Paul on this, the one thing I would say is that, for instance, if I'm Paddy, you know, when you mentioned this one, one of the things that's in my head with my one eye on this one, I think it's because it's a similar kickoff time, and I always sort of pull that in, is the Leicester game.
Yeah.
Where I agree with Rob that Chelsea at the minute are looking vulnerable. They are shipping goals. It wouldn't surprise you if Everton scored two. The only thing I'm thinking is that I think it wouldn't surprise me if Chelsea, looking at what they did midweek against Southampton, the fact that they've suddenly decided to find some attacking fluency and the extent to which they have. So they've scored four now, two games on the bounce is what I'm saying. It wouldn't surprise me if they managed to find a way to score three or four again. Holgate, Jagielka, Williams and Baines have all got their own slight issues. Yeah. I think Holgate will end up being a terrific footballer, to be honest with you. Too. But right now, he's not that assured. And what he's got next to him in Jagielka is a player who's of a certain age who can be got at. Williams can be got at. Baines can be got at. They've got the collective memory of having put five past Everton earlier in the season. I just sort of wonder if Chelsea do start to click, where I take Rob's point, it does not. If you say to me right now, Everton score two, I don't laugh you out the room. But there's every chance that Chelsea find a way to score three or four.
I entirely agree with both of you. I think there's goals in this game. It's interesting you highlight the defence. You go through it and you look at Williams, Baines and Jagielka in particular, and there's a serious lack of pace. Yeah. There's not as much balance as I would like there at all. Again, they're targeting a top-class centre-back this summer. You've got the target that would be ideal, that everybody would love to see brought in, somebody like a Virgil van Dijk, or the more realistic options of Michael Keane and Harry Maguire. And they would all address that issue, that slight imbalance in the Everton side. If you look at previous matches between these two sides, Diego Costa has routinely bullied Phil Jagielka. that prey's on my mind.
He's very much the sort of centre-forward Jagielka doesn't want to know about, in that he's just a little bit quicker than Jagielka, because I think Jagielka is still quite quick. One of the things that struck me at the Anfield, in the Anfield derby, was that Jagielka can still cover ground a little quicker than people give him credit for, but Costa's a bit faster than him. He's a bit stronger than him. He's definitely a bit nastier than him. All of that sort of stuff. He's very much not what Phil Jagielka wants to deal with.
Yeah, and the nastier bit is the important bit there for me, because we've seen Jagielka lose his rag in those in those circumstances. He knocks him off the ball, he knocks him out of his rhythm. There was a poignant moment a few years ago when Chelsea beat us 6-3. I think it was the start of last season, actually. And Costa had a row with Seamus Coleman, and Jagielka didn't know how to handle it. And after that point, Costa went on and scored another couple of goals. And he, in a sense, you wonder if there's some sign, kind of Indian sign, with regards to Diego Costa and Chelsea. I don't think the 5-0 plays that important a role, because that was a different Everton.
Yeah.
A very static, kind of ageing core to the team. And that's been reinvigorated over the last 3 or 4 months. The fact that this is a Goodison feeds into our hands as well. Insofar as the result, if this were at Chelsea, I would have no hesitation in predicting a home victory, because Everton now know they're finishing in 7th place in the table, and it's going to be hard to get themselves up for that game. The crowd won't allow a bad performance, a limp display like the one we saw against West Ham. So it makes for an intriguing battle. And I think the outcome that I can foresee is that both sides score several and we end up with a 2-2 or a 3-2, one way or the other. Chelsea's clinical edge in front of goal, the fact that they've scored 4 in the last 2 games without actually creating that many chances. Did they have 4 shots against Spurs and converted them all? That's hyper-clinical, and that kind of finishing wins you games regardless of how you play, really.
Yeah, they're very metronomical with their finishing. I think that... I think it's this, for me, of all the teams that Chelsea would have to play, Everton away and probably Liverpool away would be my choice. Is just
your dream too, almost.
Yeah, just because of the crowds are so vociferous, especially at Everton, and you know they will scream. No. In terms of screaming for decisions and stuff, when you want to get on the referee's back, and you know,
we do that very well.
I've been there a lot of times at Goodison and just watched us. You know,
so it's not just us who say this.
Wilt after the after refereeing's decisions, and the crowd are just up. I remember. Do you remember Joe Max Moore? Remember that? 4 minutes into injury time, Joe Max Moore scored to rescue a point for Everton. And I never heard a roof lifted up. And you know when you're just so angry that someone scored and you just, oh, it's horrible. But anyway, yeah, Everton can do that to you. And I'm hoping that crowd is whipped up into a frenzy. And don't forget, if Everton win, they go above Arsenal, right? Mm-hmm. Spurs beat Arsenal. Then all of a sudden, you know, Everton a couple of points in front of Arsenal, and yes, they'll have games in hand, but, you know, creates that little bit of doubt, and all of a sudden Everton could be looking at a possible top six finish. So there is some incentive. I'm clutching at straws here. Now, there is some incentive for Everton to beat Chelsea or get a draw, which I suspect might be the outcome.
A slightly surreal moment as you were... dissing Everton there, Paul. I saw Everton legend Graham Sharp peer through the window of his studio as if he'd heard you through the soundproof room.
All right, let's look at your predictions. And I think it's a very hard game to predict. I think both of the Sunday games are very hard games to predict. Paddy?
2-2.
2-2, Rob?
3-2, Everton.
Paul?
3-3.
3-3. Man alive, there's some serious...
Lukaku's going to have to show for that to happen, though, and I just... don't see him against Chelsea.
Score a couple against Chelsea in the FA Cup last year?
He
was phenomenal that day, actually. Remember that goal he scored?
Saturday night.
That's the exception to the rule rather than the general pattern at the moment, and we still need to see more of him. You look at the recent performance against Liverpool at Anfield, and he didn't show up at all. He's capable of those kinds of performances. If he does, Everton have got a good chance of winning.
Top four picture, we're recording this before City play United, which is slightly frustrating, but it's one of them. So we don't actually know how that plays out by the time you listen to this. So sorry about that. Moving forward, we're also recording it from a Liverpool point of view before City and United and Arsenal obviously all play their weekend games. And then Liverpool know a bit more of what they need to do when they're up against Watford on Monday night, Rob. But I think it's quite straightforward what Liverpool need to do at home, away at Watford and at home to Southampton. It's 6 points. 6 points keeps all Wolves from the door, and then it's more have a little look after those two boys, but win, get 6 points in the meantime.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking at it now, again, ahead of the City game, and on the back of a bad week where our rivals have been winning and we lost at home to Palace, you can't see past us must-win situations. Having said that, it does depend what happens between now and Liverpool's game. Liverpool, until a week ago, were in pole position for this fourth place spot. The bookies had us at 2-7 on. United was something like 4-1, and they've come right in. Yes, okay, of course we need a win, but it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. Again, United get turned over at City, do what they do at home this season and draw with Swansea. I wouldn't put money on it, but it's possible. If that happens, Klopp can take Liverpool to Watford and go, you know what, boys, just don't lose this, okay? Whatever you have, don't get no points. Go and win against Southampton at home, yes, but don't lose it. Having said that, a win would be very, very handy at this stage. It would calm all nerves, and I think it would put Liverpool perhaps back in the box seat.
On the Palace result, it's a strange issue around the way in which we supporters perceive results in football matches. For instance, Liverpool end up in a situation where they draw against Bournemouth, and then if you'd have said to Liverpool supporters, right, you've got West Brom away, you've got Stoke away, you've got Palace at home, would you take 6 points? I think most Liverpool supporters would have said yes. Liverpool take 6 points in the first two, and then they drop points against Palace, and it felt like an enormous kick in the teeth. It felt like a real, real blow, to a real dent to the top four hopes of the club, of the side, of everyone involved. It's a strange thing that it's partially the results that other sides have picked up in the meantime, but I think it's also the manner of how limp Liverpool were against Crystal Palace, and the feeling that what will become Liverpool's undoing if they don't finish in the top four this season will be how limp they've been against the sides from eighth down, especially at home.
Yes, but I think this is a sort of unique, not unique, actually, it's far from unique, but it's
2017, I'm referring to.
It's a time in the season where Liverpool are simply stretched beyond belief in terms of resources because of injury. We're our thinnest, and there's no getting away from that. I thought we had a period in the Crystal Palace game. I mean, Palace were flying in the way they're Liverpool's nightmare opponent. We get ourselves in charge in the game because we have a world-class player, borderline world-class player, and Coutinho scores an incredible goal. We let them back into it, but then we're actually quite dominant for about 15 minutes after half-time. It didn't feel like that in the ground, but watching it back, there's chances there. And then Liverpool concede, and that's when
But Liverpool are poor between 60 and 70, Rob.
Yeah, sure.
They lose all momentum between 60 and 70. They don't make it two, and then they lose all momentum. And that's what I mean when I'm saying limp. Liverpool will limp in that period.
Yeah.
It might be that there's an energy level thing. It might be that there's no option on the bench. But Liverpool between 60 and 70 have the initiative on 60 and then hand it to Palace by the time we get to 70, and then Palace score.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no getting away from it. The Liverpool you and I have watched most of this season, for a good part of it, have been a team good enough to call themselves a top three team. The Liverpool I'm watching at the moment, stripped of players like Henderson, Lallana, Mane, who's been our best player this season, stripped of those kind of players, Liverpool feel to me like a kind of a seventh place team. This seventh place team has to kind of find a way to treat these games as cup finals, to use cliches, find a way to sort of dog its way to fourth and hope that some results go for us. One thing that's not being evaluated, well, I don't think it's coming up often enough in this, when Liverpool supporters should calm themselves with this, is United's fixture list. United are still the biggest threat to Liverpool for fourth. United's fixture list in their remaining six is still ridiculous. They've got it, as we speak, they've got to go to City, they've got to go to Arsenal, and they've got to go to title-chasing Spurs. They've also got to face Palace at home, I think Southampton away, possibly.
Amongst the Europa League.
Only Swansea ahead of us now feels like sort of a gimme for them. So I'm not pessimistic yet.
Curiously, though, you look at Liverpool's run-in, and for any other top six side, you'd be thinking, we're going to take maximum points here. But if you were to design a prototype run-in for Liverpool, it would not be this one. And you look at the Crystal Palace game, and issues came home to roost there that will continue to plague Liverpool until they bring in a certain kind of player. And referring to that disparity in results between the top four and the rest, if you like. Liverpool at home, sides that sit deep, they don't find a way to break them down. The Achilles heel of the set pieces comes into play. And I think for a Liverpool fan, now you might play the likes of Watford in the remaining games. But they're games that could present a series of problems for Liverpool that they're not currently equipped to deal with.
I think Liverpool's biggest problem isn't even set pieces, Paddy. I think Liverpool's biggest problem at the moment is Liverpool need the games to be battles. they need the opponents to set a tempo. I think when Rob says before about no Henderson and no Lallana, I think one of the issues Liverpool have had is they're the players who set a tempo for Liverpool. And that's, if you look at Liverpool's sort of results and performances, you know, Liverpool get a result against West Brom and Stoke. There's loads and loads of battle and needle all over the pitch. They get a result against Burnley. All Burnley are is a big running needly battle. And Liverpool's players step up to that and find a way to win, and they do the business. I think one of the things that Palace did, whether it was deliberate or not, and I think one of the reasons why, for instance, Liverpool have only took 1 point from two matches against Bournemouth, is if there isn't a battle on show, Liverpool struggle to up the tempo themselves, unless it's a very, very big game, at which point it's just end-to-end anyway, and then Liverpool finds a way there. And I think, Paul, that's what's really hurting this side at the minute, is not being able to set a tempo and keep a tempo and say, no, we're going to find a way. We're going to keep you out. We're going to keep you out at one end by penning you in at the other. And I thought you saw that again in the Crystal Palace game. Liverpool, first half, they just meander through it. When they go 1-0 up, you know, they should be foot on throat. We make it 2-0. Then they come out second half. They don't make it two by the hour mark. It should be, we don't stop now, boys. We're absolutely all over you. Yeah, and yet they just can't do it.
Clearly what I've seen in recent weeks, not so much in January, which was just, you know, everybody lost form and you just have them moments. And I said at the time that, you know, form temporary, class is permanent. They came out of that. But you still got this Achilles heel for me of not underestimating, but not having that same kind of intensity against teams at Anfield that you're expected to be. I reckon if you put the top five teams in front of Liverpool for the last five games of the season, you'd take close to maximum points. Just because I know if Liverpool playing anyone who of any sort, home or away, they'll be up for it 100%. I don't know. They find this kind of, we are Liverpool, you know, and we don't care about you kind of attitude. I don't see that so much at Anfield against the lower. It's about tempo. It's about going out and thinking, from the very beginning, you know, almost have it in your mind, this is Chelsea we're playing, you know, and go out with that same mentality. And that's what I've noticed, you know, I don't want to bring Spurs into it, but I have to. That's what I've noticed about the change in our mentality over the last 2 years. Ironically, this season, at this particular moment in time, we've not lost to anyone other than, obviously, Manchester United, Liverpool, and who was the third one away? Chelsea away. So none of those normal slip-ups that Spurs used to have, you know, Stoke at home, West Brom at home.
I agree. I think it's all about tempo. And I think that if Liverpool play a side, that's going to play it to tempo. And I'd include Burnley. Burnley have a tempo. You might not like it. It's not glorious football, but they have a tempo. So Liverpool match
that
tempo.
You know you have to match it. Yeah.
Whereas, as I say, Palace just played dead. And one of my worries, Rob, looking at this run, as Paddy sort of cited there, is Watford haven't got a ton to play for. Southampton haven't got a ton to play for. West Ham might not have a ton to play for by the time we go to the Olympic Stadium. And Middlesbrough may well be down. I mean, point about this is there's every chance these are four sides that just play dead and then find themselves suddenly in a football match, if you know what I mean, because Liverpool haven't put them to bed whilst they're playing dead.
The away games may be better for Liverpool than the home games, and I say that having seen us get the two wins in the recent tougher ways. I do think the resources Liverpool have got, and Lallana coming back may make a significant difference, means that all Liverpool's games are going to be 50-50-ish games. And Liverpool need to stay focused and make sure they win the big moments. Against Stoke, we stayed focused and came through. Against West Brom, we did. Against Palace, we didn't. I think it'll be a tight game against Watford. I think it suits Liverpool better that it's a tight cup final-y type of game.
I think it suits Liverpool. It's Monday night on telly.
Yeah, I think Watford, it's a last hurrah in their season. You say nothing to play for in front of their crowd. They want to sign off with being able to talk about having beaten Liverpool in the summer. So they come at Liverpool. And Liverpool could come very badly unstuck if Watford score first in that game. I'm more than prepared to envisage that we lose that one 2-0 or 3-1 and go, for fuck's sake. Right? But at the same token, it could play into Liverpool's hands. If Liverpool stay focused and in the zone, the way they did at West Brom in particular, I think
Liverpool need Watford to have a big first 10-15 minutes to have a go. I think Liverpool need Watford to think that they can win the game. Watford have won the last three at home. It's worth pointing that out. Won the last three at home without conceding.
Have they?
I think that plays into Liverpool's hands as well. I think Liverpool need a Watford who are confident and think they can get something. I think if Liverpool come and want to get a win on the television in front of their own supporters,
they're going to need to kick up the bum, Watford, because I'm sure in their last game Troy Deeney sort of came out and criticised the players as if to say, you know, you gave up the ghost, you know what I mean? And so there's going to be
that was the Hull away.
Yeah, so it's going to be you'd expect a bit of a backlash from that, from them to sort of come out.
I think that's what Liverpool will need to get the result. As I say, Liverpool were terrific at West Brom. It's one of the best performances of the season. And the reason why is because it's just 90 minutes of sheer hell. And they stand up to that sort of thing. Whereas if it's 40 minutes where not much happens, Swansea at home for Liverpool is a classic example of, you know, Swansea are in a terrible state when they come to Anfield, but 45 minutes, not much happens. They get in at half-time and they pull themselves together and they go, there's not much to be scared of. Whereas if they'd have actually started the first half, the way in which they started the second, they probably got picked off. I think Liverpool need a Watford who feels that they can get something. Paddy, can they? Prediction.
I think Watford will feel that they can get something from Liverpool, which again does, as Rob has mentioned, play into Liverpool's hands. Because I think when sides come on to Liverpool and play at tempo, somebody like an Emre Can gets more involved. If it's a home at Anfield and you're sat deep against Burnley, he doesn't quicken the pace quite quickly enough for me. If Watford come out and play, Liverpool will have too much for them, and I think that's probably what will happen. So maybe a 2-1 Liverpool win.
Rob?
I think Liverpool dog out and a 1-0, and it becomes a theme that we'll come back to talk about fondly.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree with you, Paddy, 2-1. I think that Liverpool might go behind, though, and a bit like the Stoke game, going to have to sort of find somewhere for a little late comeback.
Okay, I'm going to speak to Les from Amber Nectar Fanzine in a minute about Hull, but we just mentioned Swansea there, Paddy. It's now looking, I think the fixture list makes it difficult for Swansea at this stage, because you feel as though Hull will get at the very least a 3 points against Sunderland.
Yeah.
So you're looking at Swansea having to find some sort of route towards picking themselves up 6-7 points at this stage if Hull get anything else. And there's every chance last game of the season when Hull are at home to Spurs. Yes, Spurs will have a level of professionalism about them, but if they're completely secure in second at that point, it would be the most understandable set of buckets and spades you ever imagined. If Spurs, yeah, you know, if Spurs basically are 4 points off the top going into that last game, and you can see a way in which Hull even maybe get something out of that. It's tough to see, isn't it, for Swansea at the minute? The most he can do is think they're going to go down fighting.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And if you'd asked me this a month ago, the momentum very much seemed to be with them. The likes of Sigurdsson were in kind of real form. Llorente was scoring goals. I know he's come back now, and he got one at the weekend. I struggle to see how they're going to overturn that deficit, particularly because you're going to have to win every single game. The battle at the bottom usually comes down to who slips up least, as opposed to who wins as many games as possible. I look to Everton v Swansea next weekend, where Swansea at the Liberty Stadium are home against Everton, and that's one they should probably be targeting. I know this is curious to say from an Everton perspective, but if we're cemented in that seventh place and we haven't got the crowd on our backs to get us up for it, that's the kind of, that's the team you want to play at home when you're in a relegation battle, because that kind of, that battling instinct kind of gets you through. And there was almost an element of that with West Ham. They weren't totally out of it against us last weekend, but they seemed to want the game more. And there were quite a few of those Everton players on the pitch that kind of drifted through. You mentioned buckets and spades. I think Ross Barkley sat on the beach there. And the same applied to Romelu Lukaku. If Hull do pick up that win against Sunderland, it probably condemns Swansea. And that's a shame for me, because I've always held Swansea up as an example of a club that's not had too much money, but has always invested smartly, looked to implement a style, carry it out. And with that in mind, it would be a shame to lose a team like that, I think, from the Premier League.
I'm wondering how they approach Man U. I mean, it's a must. It's a must get something from for both sides. For United, it's a must win. If they care about their league position, and they do, it's an absolute must win. Swansea, do they yet treat this one as a cup final, or do they go, as you say, it's you know, there's nothing to be gained here. Let's target the Everton game because we're at home. It's really hard to see what their motivation was. Or do they go, you know what, let's just go and have a go here?
I think they do what they did at Anfield, which is just try and kill the game first half, trust that you'll hold them off, get to 0-0 at half-time, and then maybe look to have a little go and see if you can put one on the board and defend it with your lives. I think they'll look at, for instance, when Bournemouth get a point at Old Trafford earlier this season, that's a decent marker down to 10 men. I think that there's paths to look at that game at Old Trafford and go, if we can just do a bit of this for a while, we can get something. Because lots of sides have got something from Old Trafford. But the converse of that is that if it goes wrong for Swansea, you feel as though it could go very badly wrong. At which point you don't want to be getting a thumping at this stage.
I like the fact that's a 12 o'clock kickoff from Swansea's point of view, because the 12 o'clock kickoffs anywhere, you know, the home team, the crowds tend to be a bit flat from the night before, and you can take advantage of that. And Swansea have got, you know, in Llorente and Sigurdsson, the two very, very good players that, you know, one of the players that we always talk about at Spurs that we were gutted we let go was Gylfi, but it was Gylfi or Eriksen, and, you know, Eriksen's not a bad replacement. Can't play both of them at the same time, but I'd have him back at Spurs any day of the week. I rate him highly. And Llorente is a killer in front of goal, especially with his head. He can score goals. So I wouldn't write them completely off. And it depends who's got the need the most, I think, on the day. And I do think the 12 o'clock kickoff make a difference.
Now, moving into the way in which this picture shakes itself out now, I don't think, if you look at Burnley's remaining fixtures, there might be some people listening thinking, can Burnley get sucked in? Palace away, West Brom home, Bournemouth away, West Ham home. You feel as though there'll be enough in there for them to see it through. And simultaneously, you can't quite see how Swansea get the requisite number of points on the board to worry them at this stage. Even West Ham, for instance, on 38, Bournemouth on 38, Leicester on 37 with a game in hand. It just sort of does seem like it's Hull or Swansea, Paddy, and therefore you think it's almost certainly going to be Swansea.
Yeah, you're right there. It's a two-horse race now. One goes down, the other stays up. It's Hull, obviously, in the box seat. The fact that they've got a game like Sunderland that you yourself have listed as almost a shoe-in in their favour, that's another 3 points on the board. And you wonder whether Swansea can point to any real games and say, we're definitely going to take 3 points here. It's curious, isn't it? Because you look at the two sides, and what's happened has been that at certain points in the season, a new manager's come in and given them a bit of a lift. But I think, arguably, it's occurred for a longer period of time with Hull.
Yeah.
The Paul Clements effect worked for a month or two, and then all of a sudden a rot started to set in. But under Silva, things have started and continued to snowball, particularly at home. And personnel-wise, there's not much in that side that you can look at and you can pick out. I like Klukas in central midfield. I think he's a very underrated holding midfielder. Harry Maguire at the back as well. But otherwise, it's a team of misfits. Your Lazar Markovic's and your Umaniasses, the guys that aren't good enough for your Everton's and Liverpool's. Swansea have got some bona fide talent in that team. But it's all down to the manager for me. I think he's done a wonderful job.
Okay, then. I think you're all in agreement on that one. So it's a fantastic weekend, stretching itself out right the way through, through until Monday. It's very nice indeed of the Premier League to line up for three games on Sunday, if you are. I mean, it lines up the idea of either a big Sunday out or a Saturday night out, and then a lazy, lazy Sunday. You've got options, is what I'm saying. not that we want to encourage a drinking culture here, but I think we're all pretty much bought in, whether we like it or not, to that sort of thing. I'm going to ask a bit of a mag question to close the show. Which thing's going to be the game of the weekend, Paddy?
Chelsea-Everton,
Rob.
Yeah, the clash of the blues.
Clash of the blues off.
North London derby really disappoints. I think it's one of those derbies that both teams normally go for it. So I'll go to North London derby.
North London derby, okay. You've had all the talk about all those games. Have a fantastic weekend, whatever game it is that you're going to, whatever football you're watching. Should be an absolute cracker, and we'll almost definitely know where we are by Monday, or in Liverpool's case, by Tuesday.